Hey, hello again, everyone. Welcome to the I Told You So edition of the Daily Daily Caller podcast for December 10th, 2019, the Tuesday edition. If you haven't listened to yesterday's show, spoiler alert, I was right about everything. I'm Derek Hunter. I am your host. Welcome to the program. You can email me, Derek, D-E-R-E-K, at dailycaller.com. Congratulate me for my soothsaying abilities and my ability to predict exactly how everything would go yesterday. My God, what an amazing, you know, I'm horrible at playing the lottery, hence I work for a living, but to get something so dead solid perfect is a nice vindication of that I haven't wasted my life completely. No, I mean, I wasted good chunks of my life, and I was wasted good chunks of my life, and I'm perfectly okay with all of that, but I was able to pick up some tidbits of information and retain them along the way and be able to formulate a successful prediction is a nice feeling, and by the evening time, everything had come to pass. I'm talking, of course, about the Inspector General's report that I talked about on yesterday's program, about how it was going to be, there's going to be a little in there for something for everybody. And whatever little that is, everybody is going to jump on it and glom onto it and treat it as though the rest of the report doesn't exist after they passively acknowledge that the other parts that are bad for their agenda sort of exist. Then they'll move on and just focus on that which suits their needs best. It was as predictable as the setting sun, yet most people were engaged in the build-up to it. They weren't going to predict what I predicted. So congratulations to me. I'll explain all of that in case you're lost when we get into the program. We have a bunch of audio. We have a bunch of clips from the from the Inspector General's report. We've got statements from the head of the FBI, the Attorney General, the attorney looking into the criminal activity that the Inspector General didn't touch on. We're going to have it all. It'll be your one-stop shop for it. All the people who have been screaming bloody murder from the left or the right are still going to be screaming bloody murder from the left or the right and trying to tell you what is isn't and what isn't is based upon what I think sells most of their stuff. You know, to be perfectly honest with you, they want you to listen, they want you to watch, and that's it. I'm just here to tell you how it is. And that's where we'll start and possibly even end today, because there's a lot that we need to cover. We shall see. But first of all, thank you for downloading, sharing, and spreading it and doing all that good stuff with friends and family and all that. Thank you for that. If you want to support the program and help upbuild our technology and things like that and our knowledge and all the software and everything that goes into this, make this show sound better so it doesn't sound like that, like when my daughter gets on the microphone. The website is patreon.com/Derek Hunter Podcast, or you can just email me something through the snail mail. So many of you have done that, and I appreciate that more than you know. The address is 19... Wait, no. What is it? Good Lord. I can't even think of the stupid address right now. It is 1920 L Street. Just the letter L Street, Northwest, NW. 1920 L Street, NW, Suite 200, Washington, D.C., 20036. And my name is Derek Hunter. Otherwise, it'll just sit there in the dead letter office. Okay, let's leave a little hat tip to our sponsors. Look, a lot of people up on Capitol Hill are sore from the beating they've taken over the last 24 hours. They need some ancient life oil to help them. Look, CBD oil is all the rage. I take it. I'm sitting right here. Can you hear that? That's me shaking the box with the bottle of my CBD oil in it. I have the chocolate mint variety. I've even turned my dad onto this, and my dad has lots of aches and pains, and he finds it makes a big difference in his ability to walk straight. His hips and his knees are doing so much better thanks to CBD oil from ancientlifeoil.com. You should try it too, but don't take my word for it. Don't take my dad's word for it by proxy. Do a little bit of digging around on the internet and see what other people are saying. Find out why hundreds of thousands of Americans have become true believers in the miracle of CBD oil. And then once you do that and you decide, hey, I'm going to give this a shot, go to ancientlifeoil.com, check it out, pick your preferred flavor, and then enter the promo code Derek, just D-E-R-E-K at checkout, my name, and you'll get 10% off your entire order. You can't beat that deal. It's a great way to get in to try this out, to see if everybody else is crazy, or maybe you're missing something, because you're missing something. Trust me on that. The website, ancientlifeoil.com, all one word, promo code Derek at checkout, gets you 10% off your total order. You'll thank me for it. Okay, the Inspector General Report. Mr. Horowitz released his Inspector General Report yesterday. It was kind of late in the day. I thought it would be out by 9 or 10. It didn't come out till about 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and it did not disappoint for people who were, you know, not going to be disappointed by no conclusions. People who knew what was coming. Somebody who wasn't trying to sell you something. Who isn't trying to BS you to keep you from watching, keep you watching their show or coming back for more. Like, oh, there's got to be something in there. What's the big deal? It was, there's a lot of damning passages in the report. But like I said yesterday, the Inspector General is not going to draw conclusions. He could compel no one to speak if they'd left government. And there were people who did not cooperate with him who'd left government. Why? Well, if we apply liberal logic to it, if Donald Trump isn't willing to come up to Capitol Hill and testify, that must mean he has something to hide. Well, if these former government officials and intelligence officials didn't want to cooperate with the Inspector General, well, they must have something to hide, don't they? The beautiful part of this is John Durham, who is spearheading the criminal investigation into all of this stuff. He has the power to compel. He has the power to force testimony. He has the power of subpoenaing documents and subpoenaing people. So while they could hide from the Inspector General, and he really just sort of went unremarked upon for the most part, they can't do that anymore. It's going to be really interesting. Durham is the one to watch. This is a nice way station along the way. A little heads up on what they've found internally. Like I said, this is an audit. That's essentially what it was, an audit. The Inspector General is a political animal and restricted by law to not be able to charge anybody, not be able to compel people to testify, so on and so forth. So this internal audit, what did it find? It found that the intelligence community used a whole bunch of deception in spying on the Trump campaign. A whole bunch. They used the Steele report. Remember, we were told that the Steele report, why Jim Comey, perhaps the most honorable man ever to serve in government in any capacity, told us that he barely relied on the Steele report. He barely touched on it. It didn't bother him. It didn't come up. It was one part of a major mosaic in getting the ability to spy on American citizens through the FISA, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, through the FISA courts, the secret FISA courts. Well, it turns out that was, I can't even say mostly garbage, that was total and complete garbage. It was a lie. It was a fraud. It was a knowing fraud. And I mean, it was committed by James Comey. So there's no real surprise in that at all. It is, it was, let's see here. This is from the report itself. We concluded that the Crossfire Hurricane team's receipt of Steele's election reporting on September 19th, 2016, played a central and essential role in the decision by the FBI to support a request for FISA surveillance targeting Carter Page, as well as the department's ultimate decision to seek the FISA order. What? Now, wait a second. Let's hop in the Wayback Machine to last year when James Comey's book came out. And the one time he faced any semblance of serious, legitimate questions to the liberal narrative was when he appeared on Bret Baier's show. I remember it because he was about a half an hour late for the interview. Traffic was particularly bad. I happened to be down at Fox that day. He was very, very late. They had to sort of move everything around in the show. He didn't want to talk to anybody. He wasn't a particularly friendly fellow. He came barging in with his entourage of security to keep people away from him. And he busted into there and was late. But the interview did happen. And during the course of the interview, Bret Baier asked him about the influence of the Steele dossier. Here's what he said.
You called the dossier unverified, salacious. Why did you use that to the FISA court to ask for surveillance for Carter Page? Not only use it, but you led with it. A bulk of that FISA application deals with that dossier. Why?
Yeah, that's not my recollection, Brett. And I don't know that the FISA application has been released. My recollection was it was part of a broader mosaic of facts that were laid before the FISA judge to obtain a FISA warrant.
There was a lot more than the dossier in the FISA application?
My recollection was there was a significant amount of additional material about Page and why there was probable cause to believe he was an agent of a foreign power. And the dossier was part of that, but was not all of it or a critical part of it, to my recollection.
I remember things vaguely, you know, as somebody who prides themselves on being awesome. I don't remember it that way, but hey, it could go either way. Anybody believe this guy? Anybody believe this guy after what I just read you from the actual report itself? I'll read it again, just for the hell of it. It's under the heading, The Role of Steele Election Reporting in the Applications, on page 359. It reads as follows, quote, "We concluded that the Crossfire Hurricanes team's receipt of Steele's election reporting on September 19th, 2019, played a central and essential role in the decision by the FBI to support the request for FISA surveillance targeting Carter Page, as well as the department's ultimate decision to seek the FISA order." Huh, that's weird. That's in direct contradiction to what you just heard the director of the FBI, who signed off on this course of action, saying to Bret Baier in an interview. Now, an interview with Bret Baier is not legally binding or anything such of the sort, but it's very telling that this man of impeccable integrity, just ask him, James Comey, the hero in his own story, would say something that is demonstrably untrue and that the Inspector General found to be untrue. In particular, the report continues, the unit chief told us that she thought probable cause was, quote, a close call when the team first proposed seeking a FISA in mid-August, and separately when she discussed the idea around the same time. She said that it was Office of Intelligence. She said the idea was the Steele reporting received. She said it was the Steele reporting received in September concerning Page's alleged activities with Russian officials in the summer of 2016 that, quote, pushed it over, end quote, the line in terms of establishing probable cause that Page was acting in concert with Russian officials. The unit chief's testimony was consistent with this testimony, that Steele's reporting was, quote, kind of pushed it over the line in terms of FBI being ready to pursue FISA authority targeting Page. Contemporaneous handwritten notes from Case Agent 1 and then Chief of NSD's Counterintelligence and Export Control Sedition similarly indicated that late in August 2019, an assessment had been made by the FBI Office of General Counsel, or the Office of Intelligence, or both, that the information known at the time did not establish probable cause. So before they got their hands on the Steele dossier, the people in charge had decided that there was no probable cause. Suddenly, they get the Steele dossier, and it's game on. Part of the game that they played with the Steele dossier is quite telling and should disturb everybody in the country, because if they could do this to somebody associated with a presidential campaign, what could they do to you? And what are the odds of you finding out about it? You'd likely never, ever find out about it. That the government would be watching you, looking at you, checking you out, figuring things out. But no, there's a very interesting timeline that went on when it came to the Steele dossier. What else happened? Well, the report, which was fed, the so-called report, the so-called dossier, was fed to Michael Isikoff over at Newsweek. And he wrote up a piece about it. And then that story in Newsweek was used by these very same people seeking to get a FISA warrant that as proof that, look, this dossier is backed up by independent reporting that says the same thing by none other than Michael Isikoff, when in fact those FBI agents seeking this did themselves give it to Michael Isikoff. It's kind of weird, isn't that? Doesn't that seem corrupt? But as you heard all over the liberal media today, MSNBC, CNN, nonstop, and even some of the liberals on Fox, they say, well, the inspector general found no evidence, documented evidence or testimony evidence, that indicate that any of this was politically motivated. No political motivation. Now, it's very important, the wording right there. No documentary evidence or testimony that says it was. So what you're looking at there is that you would have to have somebody in the law enforcement community fully and completely and totally aware of the powers of government to find information, to obtain communication via text message, via email, what have you. They would have to have written in an email. They'd have to sit down and be going, yeah, no, listen, man, I know we really want to screw Trump. Let's screw Trump. Let's screw Trump. Let's do this. Let's screw Trump. The odds of that happening are slim to none, because those very same people involved in this would know that that would not look good should it ever come to light, right? So the likelihood of them putting this information in writing is slim to none, because that's the way it works. Nobody is that stupid. Well, very few people are that stupid. Carter and Page are kind of that stupid. The other thing would be testimony. So the two choices, and I told you this yesterday, the inspector general is not somebody to put the screws to anybody. He can't charge anybody. There's no real consequence. I mean, he can recommend charges, so you don't want to obviously lie to the inspector general because that's illegal, but you can leave things out, and you certainly don't volunteer information like, say, for example, that while you're talking to the inspector general, you don't say, well, we did this because we hated Trump. We did this because we believed it to be the right course of action at the time, given the information that we had. It was a very sensitive nature of information that we were dealing with, and we had to act in what we thought was the best interest of the country and of justice at the time. It's that kind of scam. I told you, he wasn't going to find anything on this front because he hasn't found anything on this front. It's the exact redo of the Hillary Clinton email investigation that the inspector general did, where he found that politics played no role in this, even though he had all of the struck page texts. He said, here are the struck page texts, but they have denied it. I can't prove anything because they've denied it. It is not my job to draw conclusions from that. Therefore, I accept that they did this based solely on the law and the evidence that they had at the time, it was a foregone conclusion that this part was going to be a part of the report. I told you, and it came to pass. In addition to that, listen to this part, page 360. The FISA statute rules for procedure do not establish requirements specific to the use of clandestine human sources, meaning spies, people that they send into, you know, the honeypots that go up and try and get information out of people, just like they're normal people or interested parties. So such as steals to support probable cause for FISA applications. So the covert human sources, that's Steele's dossier. The FBI's FISA guidance specifies that agents should take into account the reliability of any informant, the circumstances of the informant's knowledge, and the age of the informant relied upon when judging the evidence to support probable cause in any given case. As described in earlier chapters, we found that, listen to this, the FBI did not have information corroborating the specific allegations against Carter Page in Steele's reports when it relied upon them in the FISA application. The FBI did not have any proof of their own, independent from the Steele dossier, and moreover, they didn't bother. The FBI and the NSD officials told us that the verification process set forth in the FBI's procedures does not require the FBI to have corroboration. Oh, isn't that nice? They can just hear a rumor from somebody that they trust, somebody that they like, somebody they used to employ, and somebody they fired because he lied to them. And they can go to the court and get the ability to spy on you. Isn't that lovely? Isn't that nice? Now, in addition to the FISA warrant on Carter Page coming directly and as a direct result from the Steele dossier, again, this will all be ignored in the New York Times and the CNN and all of that. They'll gloss over it. They'll report it in paragraph 72 of a very long write-up, and then they can say, well, look, we reported on it. I don't know what you're complaining about. And they'll obsess on the claim that there was no political bias found, and that's it. That's all that will interest them. But what's interesting is the FBI used Christopher Steele to get information on General Flynn. They even promised to pay him quite a bit for that. Again, from the report, Case Agent 2 told the Office of Inspector General that he informed Steele that the FBI was interested in obtaining information in three buckets, according to Case Agent 2's written summary of the meeting, as well as the supervisory intel analyst's notes. These three buckets were: 1, additional intelligence reporting on specific named individuals, such as Page or Flynn, involved in facilitating the campaign-Russian relationship. 2, physical evidence of specific individuals involved in facilitating the Trump campaign-Russian relationship, such as emails, photos, ledgers, memorandums, etc. And 3, any individuals or subsources who Steele could identify, who could serve as cooperating witnesses to assist identifying persons in the Trump campaign-Russia relationship. None of that came to pass, but they were out there trying to mine Christopher Steele to get dirt on Michael Flynn. Now, why? Why would they be doing that? Why would Steele be doing that? Well, you keep reading. Case Agent 2's written summary of the meeting also indicates that Case Agent 2 explained that the FBI was willing to compensate Steele, quote, significantly, end quote, for information concerning the three buckets, and Steele would be paid $15,000 for his trip to the European city and for the early October meeting. Isn't that interesting? After the FBI had fired Michael or Christopher Steele for lying to them about speaking to the press, he was barred from going out and speaking to the press on other matters that they'd used him for in the past. They fired him and he lied about it. They then went back to him and said, don't worry, brah, we're going to pay you. We're going to pay you tons of money. Isn't that interesting?
But of course, this doesn't really matter. The report will soon be forgotten. I guarantee you that every cable network on the right, or, well, the one cable network on the right, will be focusing on this as if it matters because it's red meat to their base. They'll be ignoring some of the other conclusions, and every cable network on the left, which is every other cable network, will quickly move on to this and talk about impeachment. They will dismiss it. But their own initial reporting sort of belies the problem of, as the Inspector General reported, quote, numerous serious factual errors and omissions in the application that undercut certain allegations in the FISA application. See, that's very important. Whether or not there was political bias is irrelevant. Horowitz was only going to report there was political bias if somebody had a breakdown while talking to him and said, please forgive me. Oh, Lord, please forgive me. I did it because of politics. We all did it. And flipped. But it's interesting and telling the circumstantial case. The circumstantial case is quite damning, in addition to all the stuff I told you about the Steele dossier. We have that little bit of information that there were, quote, numerous and serious factual errors and omissions in the allegations. Pretty serious, that undercut certain allegations in the FISA application. There were, in fact, a couple of dozen errors, in quotes, that the Inspector General found. What's curious about them is, much like every mistake that media has made since Donald Trump has been residing at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, they all, every single one of them, went in one direction. Against Donald Trump and in favor of more spying. Isn't that curious? I mean, that's a hell of a coincidence. That's like rolling dice and it coming up snake eyes 10 times in a row, 20 times in a row. It's amazing how that works out. Now, I'm sure it's just a coincidence. I would never try to sully the reputation of some people inside our intelligence community and not the FBI. They are nothing but as pure as the wind-driven snow, right? In fact, FBI Director Christopher Wray sat down with Pierre Thomas over at ABC News, and he didn't say that. He said that he would not call, and he would not use the term deep state, but while defending the people who work for him, he said that there were some mistakes, some serious mistakes, and they were going to be looking at making corrective action. Now, this is not a decisive leader that you're about to hear. I'm going to play this clip for you. This is somebody sort of whitewashing, downplaying for whatever reason. I don't know what Director Wray is all about or why he would do this. As an American citizen, I think you should be pissed off that the power of the government, if the power of the government can be used to spy on a major party's presidential campaign, on flimsy evidence the FBI didn't and couldn't verify, then it can be used to spy on you. It can be used to spy on anybody. There are no rules and there is no such thing as privacy. You would think that since this directly impacts privacy, the left, who absolutely loves abortion, would then come out and say, wait a second, we base abortion rights on this mythical idea of privacy in our Constitution. Therefore, this could be a threat to that. But no, this is a very specific case. This involves Donald Trump. There are no rules that apply to anything that involves Donald Trump. Are you crazy? The old rules, the laws, the standards, rights, none of that applies when you're dealing with Donald Trump. That's just science, according to the left. So listen to Christopher Wray sort of deny the existence of the deep state, even though there's very little doubt, and other past government officials are on record saying, thank God for the deep state, and saying that, but don't worry, there were some problems, we're going to correct those problems. Would you really trust the organization and that oversaw this, that allowed all of this to happen, to then correct itself, to police itself. We aren't letting the Catholic Church decide how best to handle all the allegations against them for all the violations against small children. No, we are involving the criminal courts, justifiably so, because they couldn't be trusted to report the abuse as it was happening when they knew about it. They sure as hell can't be trusted to give you a full picture when investigating it. This should be no different.
As far as you know, based on the findings in the Inspector General report, is the FBI, was it part of some deep state?
Well, I think that's the kind of label that is a disservice to the 37,000 men and women who work at the FBI, who I think tackle their jobs with professionalism, with rigor, with objectivity, and with courage. That's not a term I would ever use to describe our workforce, and I think it's an affront to them. Having said that, there are a number of things in this report that, in my view, fall well short of the standard of conduct and performance that we and that I expect of all our employees, and we're going to be taking a number of corrective steps to address that.
Oh, don't worry. All the people who abused all the the rights, the constitutional rights of people in the Trump campaign, don't worry. They're going to look into it and make sure that this never happens again. You can trust them, can't you? You can trust them. Come on. Why wouldn't you trust these people? Just because every time you left me alone in your house, I rifled through all your dresser drawers and all your documents and stole a bunch of money doesn't mean you can't trust me to water your plants while you're out of town this time. Why wouldn't you trust me? I wouldn't call it the deep state. That smears 37,000 people. Nobody says every member of the FBI is a member of this sort of deep state hellbent on trying to damage Donald Trump. We have admission. We have a whole book by Anonymous. We had that op-ed in the New York Times by Anonymous. We have former intelligence chiefs saying, thank God for the deep state. So for the current FBI director to say, well, I don't know about this deep state business. This is the first I'm hearing about it. It sounds nefarious, and we would never do such a thing. But don't worry. All of these errors, these massive, massive errors that all happen to go in the exact same direction, for reasons unknown, nobody can possibly figure out why. Don't worry, we'll figure that stuff out, and we'll correct that where necessary if we find something that we've done wrong. You feeling better? No, I'm not feeling better. But again, this is sort of the wishy-washy stuff that I warned you about yesterday. There is something in this report for everybody. And while it is 85-90% ammunition for the right, there is still 10-15% ammunition for the left, because that's the very nature of the Inspector General. And the left will only focus on that part and dismiss the rest of it. And the right will ignore the 15% that sort of doesn't make their case and focus on the parts of the rest that best make their case and will make their audience stick around, come back for more, thank them for doing the what they view as the Lord's work, and people will get richer off of it. Rich people will get richer off of this on both sides of the aisle. That's why I recommend that you read the report yourself. Like I said, it's over 400 pages. You're not going to sit down and read it yourself all the way through in one sitting. It's boring. It is really boring. But it's important to at least read the executive summary and to look at this thing. And by the way, my buddy Adam Baldwin, the actor, you know Adam Baldwin, he's not related to the bonehead Baldwins. He's a conservative out in Hollywood. He is doing a podcast. I'm not sure when it will be up. It might be up already, but it'll be up soon, of him reading the entire Inspector General's report. So you don't even have to read the whole thing. Nothing has to be done tonight or today. But get that. It, I think, will be free. Get that report, get that podcast, and listen to the whole thing. When I see that it's live, I will point it out. As my buddy Sean Davis, who co-founded The Federalist, who worked at The Daily Caller back in the day when there were... I was the first person hired. Sean was probably like the seventh person hired at the Daily Caller. He came in, he'd gone to Wharton School of Business and helped set up the business model. They hired me long before they had a business model, which shows you how crazy they are. He tweeted, he worked for Senator Tom Coburn. He was a congressional investigator. He knows his stuff, and he is brilliant at recalling all of this stuff. He tweeted out, quote, in 2017, the FBI told Senator Chuck Grassley in a letter that provided a defensive briefing to Trump and his campaign in 2016. The Inspector General report showed that claim was a lie. The FBI attended the briefing to spy on the Trump team, not warn it of Russian attempts to infiltrate it. It's very interesting. And Sean, because he's Sean, attached the documents. Here's the letter. Dated October 26, 2017, to Grassley from the FBI. Quote, thank you for your letter, blah, blah, blah. In August of 2016, the FBI provided a counterintelligence defensive briefing to then-candidate Donald Trump and other senior campaign officials. This defensive briefing was conducted by an experienced FBI counterintelligence agent and focused on a broad range of threats posed by foreign intelligence agencies. Similar briefings were also provided to then-candidate Hillary Clinton and the two vice presidential candidates prior to the November election. FBI counterintelligence personnel also provided defensive briefings for both campaign staffs prior to the election. The FBI is not aware of any actions taken as a result of these briefings. Oh, no. Now, suddenly, in the report yesterday, quote, as we described in Chapter 3, the FBI decided not to conduct defensive briefings for any of the members of the Trump campaign about the information provided the U.S. government that served as the predicate for opening Crossfire Hurricane. Well, then what were they defensively briefing them about? However, we learned that during the course of our review that during the presidential election campaign, the FBI was invited by the Office of Director of National Intelligence to provide a baseline counterintelligence and security briefing as part of the Office of Director of National Intelligence strategic intelligence briefing given to members of both the Trump campaign and the Clinton campaign. Consistent with the ODNI and FBI's practice of prior presidential election cycles. We also learned that because Flynn was expected to attend the first such briefing for members of the Trump campaign on August 17, 2016, the FBI viewed that briefing as a possible opportunity to collect information potentially relevant to the Crossfire Hurricane and Flynn investigations. We found no evidence that the FBI consulted with department leadership or the Office of Director of National Intelligence officials about this plan. So it's all of these little rogue agencies. They're working in coordination in some points, and then other times they're working independently. It's like if you've ever watched a massive flock of birds. I'm not talking about, you know, geese flying south for the winter. I'm talking about the I don't know what kind of birds they are, but they move. It's very fluid, like they flail around. There's just this sort of blackness in the sky that you think, how are they not smashing into each other? Well, because they move as a unit and they move independently, and whatever happens to be needed at any given moment is what they do. And it sounds like our intelligence community is the same way. The FBI, this would be James Comey's FBI, viewed that briefing as a possible opportunity to collect information potentially relevant to Crossfire Hurricane and the Flynn investigations. Now, this is August. By January, when President Trump was President-elect Trump and then just sworn in shortly after the inauguration, remember, James Comey dispatched FBI agents to talk to Michael Flynn in the White House and do it informally, even though informally they knew what they were doing. It was nothing close to informal, but it was couched as informal, like, hey, we want to come over and talk to you about some procedures and things. And that is where Flynn is alleged to have lied to the FBI. That was the entire basis for his lying to investigators charge that he is now trying to have thrown out of court and is in dispute, because it sure as hell seems like a major league setup. He didn't do anything illegal or remotely illegal or even chargeable, and was not charged with anything until after January 20th, 2017. Yet they viewed the defensive, quote-unquote, briefing in August of 2016 as an opportunity to gather information about Crossfire Hurricane and the Flynn investigation. Now, how long had the Flynn investigation been going on, and why was the Flynn... Remember, Michael Flynn was a retired general, a retired three-star general, a highly decorated serviceman. What was it, 3-4 weeks ago now that Lieutenant Colonel Alexander Vindman was up on Capitol Hill testifying, and all Republicans were denounced as unpatriotic for questioning him harshly. How dare you? This man is in uniform. He is serving this country. He has a Purple Heart. You can't question his integrity. Why, it's beyond reproach. You are perhaps history's greatest monsters for even suggesting that Lieutenant Colonel Alexander Vindman would have ever even thought about. The man doesn't even jaywalk. He would never do anything wrong. And here they are, for months before the election and before the inauguration and before they ever got anything on him, and all they ever got on him was that he misled investigators in a conversation he didn't know was part of an investigation. But here they are months earlier, in August, launching and using a defensive briefing, thinking, well, we can get more dirt, we can get more information, we can feel out and see what's going on with General Flynn. Does this stink to you yet? I think it should stink to you yet. It should stink to high heaven to every American. But half of the country won't give a damn. Half of the country believes that Michael Flynn is a traitor to this country and should be rotting in prison right now, when in fact, if you actually openly, honestly look at the evidence of the investigation that was discovered by the investigation, this thing was a setup from the get-go. I think that they were going to go after the Trump campaign after they lost. I think that the people involved in this either were following orders from the president, President Obama, and Hillary Clinton, or they thought that a way to ingratiate themselves to the obvious and incoming soon-to-be president-elect Hillary Clinton was to gather as much possible dirt on her opponents so that after she won, they could, like a cat brings back a dead bird or a dead mouse and lays it on your doorstep, they could bring in all of this golden opportunity to go after that son of a bitch who dared said those mean things about you on the campaign trail. Remember, during all of this, Hillary Clinton was going to win. Hillary Clinton was going to win in a walk. It wasn't even funny. It was a joke. And they wanted to be able to, just in case, maybe they weren't going to go after these people. Maybe they were going to go after some of them. Maybe they were going to go after them piecemeal. Or maybe, just maybe, they were going to wait and say, if Donald Trump, and it was a pretty safe bet, if Donald Trump had lost, he likely would not have taken the Mitt Romney route. He would not have taken the John McCain route. He would not have taken the route most politicians take, which is to sort of just go away and let the president be president and not go out there and make a spectacle and attack that person. The job's tough enough. Politicians sort of back away from that. Donald Trump wasn't going to do that. Donald Trump wasn't going to be a failed presidential candidate like that. He was going to use his Twitter account to blast the president every single day, most likely because he would have thought it would be fun. That, I think, is pretty safe to assume. Donald Trump just operates the way Donald Trump does. I don't think it's personal. I think he'd just go out there and do it because he likes to rock the boat. Some of it could be personal because the campaign did get personal, but most of it, I think, would be just that's how Donald Trump is. That's what Donald Trump does. Well, imagine the closeness and the gratitude from the new president, Hillary Diane Rodham Clinton Jr. III. If you came in and said, well, you know, that guy attacking you and all those people attacking you, we accidentally or incidentally or whatever, we managed to find out some very interesting information about those people during the campaign, and we could really screw them. It's all perfectly legal, in quotes. Don't worry about that, but we can ruin their lives. Should we go do that, Madam President? And Hillary Clinton, what do you think her answer would be? What do you think the odds of her sitting back in a chair and going, that just doesn't seem right. I wouldn't feel comfortable doing that. Of course she wouldn't say that. It's Hillary Clinton. The Clintons carry a grudge like Atlas carries the earth, nonstop and in perpetuity. That's what I think was going on here. None of this was an accident. You can't do any of this stuff by accident. This takes planning. This takes forethought. This takes very meticulous coordination. Some of this, most of this may have been legal, just by the letter of the law. But these people were smart enough not to put certain things in writing or to use a method of communication that people can't get their hands on, whatever. It is all too just like that flock of birds, fluid and coordinated perfectly to have no plan behind it. I believe coincidences can happen, but I don't believe in coincidence after coincidence after coincidence. Sooner or later, when a pattern develops, that's no longer an accident. That's no longer a fluke. When you roll those dice 20 times in a row and you get snake eyes every time, those dice are loaded. Speaking of loaded dice, back to James Comey, because James Comey just won't go away. He can't go away. Within a few hours of the report coming out, James Comey had the report came out at 1 o'clock. James Comey tweeted a piece that he had written for the Washington Post at 3:30. Do you really think James Comey read, digested, and then commented on 434 pages or something like that in 2 hours and 15 minutes? Because his piece at the Post was posted at 3:14 p.m. That means it had to have been submitted at least an hour ahead of time. At least, being generous, assuming that he wrote the damn thing. Then had it edited and posted by that time? No. James Comey knew what was coming. James Comey was the subject of it and therefore had early access to it. And James Comey used that early access to craft himself a defense against 17. There were 17 critical errors in the actions of the FBI and the intelligence community in spying on the Trump campaign and obtaining FISA warrants. This is how former FBI director, the guy you heard earlier, characterized those 17 critical errors. He writes in the Washington Post, quote, "The Russia investigation was complicated. Not surprisingly, the inspector general found mistakes, 17 of them, things the FBI should have done differently or better. The inspector general found critical errors that ignored the law and ignored precedent and ignored policy. Those weren't just oopsies. These are the people who, if you tell them one wrong thing, they could come after you like a rabid spider monkey, and they will if they think they can gain some advantage over you." And he just calls them basically little oopsies. "Inspector General reports are valuable because they offer a chance to learn. Horowitz also concluded that low-level FBI lawyer doctored an email as part of the administrative process leading to the renewal of the application for electronic surveillance of the former campaign advisor. Although it's not clear what difference that made, it's still potentially serious wrongdoing and does not reflect the FBI culture of compliance and candor." Somebody committed what is likely a felony, and it is James Comey's responsibility to make sure that those things don't happen, especially when it comes to using the structure created to spy on foreigners on an American citizen. And somebody did it. It's potentially serious wrongdoing. Are you kidding me? Murderers are let go for less. In this case, however, the person they were spying on did nothing wrong. Carter Page did absolutely nothing wrong. In fact, Carter Page worked with our intelligence community in 2013, I believe it was, to help capture a Russian recruiter trying to get people to spy. So he was not only a Naval Academy graduate, he was on our team and part of our team trying to stop espionage within the last decade. And James Comey and his little cabal of friends thought they saw an in to get into the Trump campaign, to dig up dirt, to just put this stuff aside. Who knows, maybe for a rainy day. For all the talk of what J. Edgar Hoover was as FBI director, I think we have to add James Comey to the conversation, because this is next level shady stuff going on here. And for the Washington Post to give him a megaphone to defend himself unquestioned is, well, I want to say pathetic, but it's not surprising in the least. He claims complete and total exoneration of himself because that's what he does. He can do no wrong. James Comey is the only perfect human being. He concludes, ultimately, it appears that Barr will continue his practice of deriding the Justice Department when facts don't agree with Trump's fiction. Pointing to his personally commissioned review of the FBI's case opening, Barr has declared it is too soon to conclude that the FBI was right to start an investigation. If his goal is simply to support the president's conspiracy theories, it will always be too soon to acknowledge the facts. As the leader of an institution that is supposed to be devoted to truth, Barr needs to stop acting like a Trump spokesperson. In the words of the nation's founders, the Justice Department's Inspector General has let facts be submitted to be candid, to be submitted to a candid world. The FBI fulfilled its mission, protected the American people in upholding the U.S. Constitution, and those who attacked the FBI for 2 years should admit they were wrong. That's James Comey. Last night, yesterday afternoon, actually, and in today's Washington Post. People should admit they were wrong. 17 critical errors in the actions. 17 critical errors, each one of which would get a case thrown out of court if there were ever a court case. And this was lying to a top secret court that allows people to spy on Americans, that allows one set of Americans to spy on other Americans. And he just glosses it over. Yeah, you know what? People make oopsies all the time. One time I wore stripes with plaids. And, you know, nobody's perfect. Not even me. Of course, that was the only mistake I ever made. But still, these blowhards that create their own reality and then are protected in that reality by their fellow travelers in the media are the biggest threat, frankly, to liberty, to the Constitution. For all the whining and pissing and moaning about, oh my goodness, Donald Trump is so mean and Donald Trump is so this and so that and so the other thing, these people are the threat. These people will never admit they were wrong. James Comey flat out lied in his interview with Brett Baer. Lied. There's no question about it. We didn't really rely on the Steele dossier. It was just one little tile in a giant mosaic. And now we find out that it was key. It was key to them pursuing, obtaining, and renewing the FISA warrant on Carter Page. And here's James Comey just going, hey, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? There's really nothing that we can do with this sort of information. Mistakes were made. Mistakes happen. Things like this go on all the time. Things like this aren't supposed to go on all the time, you self-righteous prick. You're supposed to be above this. As the FBI, we empower the FBI to protect us. Who do we empower to protect us from the FBI? Now, John Durham, the U.S. attorney who has launched this investigation, in the criminal investigation into all of this, has released his own statement. He didn't have an 800-word op-ed at the ready like James Comey did. He had to wing it and counter what was being reported elsewhere in the Washington Post as supposed news. John Durham said the following, quote, "I have the utmost respect for the mission of the Office of Inspector General and the comprehensive work that went into the report prepared by Mr. Horowitz and his staff. However, our investigation is not limited to developing information from within component parts of the Justice Department," which means exactly what I've been saying since yesterday, is that the Inspector General's report was merely an audit. Think of it as an audit. It was not a criminal investigation. It was not dogged pursuit of the truth. It was an audit. Let's take a look and find out what happened. Here's basically what happened. Moving on. Inspectors general don't work all that hard. They just work slow. "Our investigation," continues Durham, "has included developing information from other persons and entities, both in the U.S. and outside the U.S., which is wildly important because part of this, a big part of this entire scam, is our intelligence community sort of working out what I refer to as a free trade agreement. We can't spy on these Americans because they're Americans. So how about you, Australia or UK or Italy or whomever? You spy on these Americans for us and you let us know what they're up to. And we'll spy on, you know, people from the UK or Australia or Italy for you that you can't spy on. We'll do your domestic spying, but we'll do it overseas. And then we'll find out and we'll trade information, see if we have anything of the goods on each other's targets." That is spying by proxy. It is theoretically in keeping with the letter of the law, but it is most definitely not in keeping with the spirit of the law. If Durham has found evidence that this happened and that this happened in a widespread manner, and you get someone like Joseph Mifsud and Stephen Halper and all sorts of other people involved in this who were agents of foreign governments trying to set this ball rolling in the first place, that's a whole nother can of worms. I don't know that we're there. I don't know that we'll ever get there. But I know that trying to get there was well outside the purview of the Inspector General. He would not have been able to do this even if he wanted to. And I guarantee you, he didn't want to. No Inspector General wants to. Durham continues, "Based on the evidence collected to date, and while our investigation is ongoing, last month, we advised the Inspector General that we do not agree with some of the report's conclusions as to predication and how the FBI case was opened." That is a pretty damning and rare statement, but it is in response to the media. When they first started reporting this, we're going, oh my goodness, why is this guy releasing a statement? The Trump administration must be very, very worried and very concerned. Well, it was because the Washington Post had reported that John Durham had agreed with the conclusions of the initiation of the investigation. It agreed with the Inspector General and the U.S. attorney most decidedly did not agree with the Inspector General's conclusion. One has all the power of law. The other one has all the power of somebody appointed by your boss. That's the difference between the Inspector General and the U.S. attorney. If you left government, you didn't have to cooperate with the Inspector General. The Inspector General had no authority to compel cooperation with the investigation. Like I said, again, it's an audit. He's looking at the books. If he'd found something completely egregious, he could have recommended that they look further into it in the Justice Department for possible criminal investigations. But with most of the key players having left government, you're not going to find out a whole lot now, are you? Well, you're going to find out the character of somebody like James Comey, but we kind of knew that already, didn't we? I think I've ranted just about enough about this. A quick word about the impeachment hearing yesterday, because that thing served its purpose like you wouldn't believe. It was designed to keep the Inspector General's report off the cable news and off the broadcast news almost all day, and it did that. It was literally nothing. It was a nothing burger. It was two lawyers who had interviewed witnesses previously in public hearings, the lawyers who questioned witnesses in Adam Schiff's hearing, and they were now testifying as to what they heard, as if the members of Congress couldn't have watched the hearings, couldn't have many of them participated because they're on both committees, and it was just a sham. It was a PR stunt to keep the Inspector General's report from being the story of the day. It worked because the media was more than willing and eager to make it work. But hopefully my last prediction that this entire Inspector General's report will be old news by Wednesday or Thursday, hopefully that won't come true. Now, the Inspector General, Mr. Horowitz, is scheduled to testify before the Senate Intelligence Committee, I believe it is, or maybe it's the Senate Judiciary Committee, one of the two. I think, you know, maybe it's Judiciary, on Wednesday. So that could breathe some more life into it. That's going to be interesting to watch if Republicans actually do ask some probative questions. Because remember, I want to leave you with this. The conclusion that Horowitz came to that the liberal media is touting, which is exactly what I told you he would be touting yesterday, is that he could find no political motive. It said nothing in the written record nor in the testimony points to a political bias. That's because nobody broke down and confessed to it. There's no direct evidence. It is not the Inspector General's job to draw inferences. So there were no inferences drawn. Everybody telling you otherwise knows this and is lying to you. Well, maybe somebody like Stephanie Ruhle is too stupid to know this, and the entire primetime lineup of CNN could be too stupid to know this. But there's at least has to be somebody at CNN who understands this, and they're being quiet and allowing the opposite to be said to the public, because nothing they do is about the truth. Everything they do is about getting to Donald Trump and harming Republicans. We'll have more on this if more develops. I didn't read the whole thing yet because it is 430 some odd pages. So I'm sure there are other nuggets that will be uncovered throughout the night and throughout the day today. And I will be back here. I'll be on the radio at 9 o'clock to talk about it. 9 o'clock in the morning, WCBM.com. And I'll be back here on Wednesday. Maybe I'll get some sleep between then and now to talk about it again. Thank you for listening, telling a friend, spreading the word, and all that good stuff. I'll see you tomorrow.
My recollection was there was a significant amount of additional material about Page.